You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Trying to make sense of the world? You've got Nightline with Pete Schwabba and Greg Bach.
Call our toll-free number now.
Headlines, culture, and real conversation.
And now, our feature presentation.
Here's Pete and Greg.
Welcome back to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen, as we kick off hour number two here on this gorgeous Wednesday night in the beautiful state of Wisconsin. It is great to have you with us. I am Pete Schwabba, sitting across, in a manner of speaking, from Greg Bach, and Dom Lee is producing the show and running the board tonight. It is great to have you here. Our question of the night is, who is the greatest late-night talk show ho?
What?
They hear that
who
right?
Who is the greatest late-night talk show host? You know, you could make an argument for the other thing, too, because some of these guys do anything to get the gig. But let us know.
My whole forehead just started sweating right there.
I apologize, Greg. That was a rookie mistake. But would love to hear your thoughts on our question of the night. Always more fun when you guys participate. Right now, we are going to jump right in here in this second hour because we have a great guest who is joining us tonight over the stream from Madison. Martine Alvarado is the Community Engagement and Business and Technology Librarian at the Madison Public Library, and he's here to talk library books and all kinds of great stuff that the library has to offer. Martine, welcome to Nightlight.
And thank you so much for making this space to talk library stuff and books and whatnot, and just very excited to be here. So apart from books, you know, they say the library is more than books. We also connect people with information. Sometimes we even host services. So one of the things that we here at the Madison Public Library that other libraries and community centers do is we host volunteer income tax preparation that is free to people for most residents. And I was just looking at a couple of statistics. So it'll usually run you like $100 to get your tax prepared if you go to a professional. Not to say that that's not a valid way to do things, but also there's a staggering amount of people who didn't file their tax returns in the past 3 years, which is the window that the IRS gives you a chance to claim that. And there's literally like $10 million sitting from 2022 or something.
Oh my goodness. So
it's one of those things that I just let people know, you know, if you didn't file taxes, you might just want to take a look and see if there's anything that goes in your favor. But going back to this service, we've had this partnership at the library for about 50 years. So it's probably our longest running partnership where we host people from the Department of Revenue, from the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, and it's people who have been trained. Some have people have like backgrounds in accounting, but they've been vetted and trained by the Department of Revenue. You make an appointment. We don't do like super complicated business things or other situations, but it is a way where people around the state can go and have their taxes done for free, filed electronically, the state and the federal ones. And that's like the call we get all the time. And a lot of times we get it right before tax filing day. So we encourage people to get in early to get these things, to cut down on the stress and to see what you are able to do in your community. So if you want to look up a couple things on the internet, you can do VITA, V-I-T-A, or you can also do TCE, Tax Counseling for the Elderly, and that's run by the AARP. And that has, between both of those, I was looking at the map, and usually you can find maybe within 25 miles of where you live service like this. So it's just one of those things that it's sometimes not really known. Once people know it, they come year after year after year to just take advantage of this. But it's can be really getting a lot of money that might not change your life or your year, but might change your month or something. So if you are able to claim some refunds. So yeah, that's something. We also, at the library, we became one of the last places where you can get the basic forms, the 1040 forms, if you want to do it old school, filling it out by paper. And also, if you have a question as to where to get your taxes done, we can help you find that. So you don't have to memorize anything of what I said. Just go over to your librarian. any free tax deals around here? The one thing we can't do is we can't tell you what to file, or we can't give you tax advice because we're not qualified to do that, and it's beyond what we're able to.
You can't tell us what the write-offs are? Come on.
Right, the write-offs that we can't also tell you if the miracle cure is really going to work for you, or what stock or what horse you should bet on. That under professional expertise, we might be in the direction of someone who claims they might be able to figure those things out.
I did not know. So is that available? Like, it's available at all times during tax season. You don't have to. It's not like from this week to this week. It's available right now. It's going to be available through mid-April, I would say, and people just need to contact you to make an appointment or come on in. I mean, I've never heard of this before. Because you say like $200, that's nice. Taxes are very expensive now. They're just going up and up and up. We usually get ours prepared by somebody because I don't trust myself, and it is very expensive. To know that there are free services out there is amazing. And
there's an income limit of $70,000 for individuals. So it's just that taken to that sort of middle to sort of like lower income, but it's one of those things that I think when you look at it, a lot of people are eligible and don't know about this service and this thing. It's not only at libraries, a lot of community centers, a lot of just like places where people gather will often host these, and you can just go to the Department of Revenue Service and Department of Revenue, and then just look it up or call your libraries. Just let's leave it at that.
Wonderful. Absolutely.
That's great. You know, it's interesting. I love libraries and I love theaters. I always thought if I wasn't in some kind of entertainment, it's just such a calm atmosphere when you're in a library or an old theater or something. How long have you been doing this, Martin? And have you seen the movie The Librarians?
Which movie, The Librarians? Because there are a couple movies, The Librarians, not like the Noah Wilde where he's kind of like almost like a Nicolas Cage type character.
Yep, so that's the one I was thinking about. That's what I was thinking about when Pete, when you were mentioning like it earlier. Like,
treasure. Yeah.
Yep, yep, yeah.
No, this is a new documentary that aired on POV on PBS about 2 weeks ago, and it shows these librarians who are just heroes trying to help kids and keep books on the shelves against book banners and that kind of thing. It's a really phenomenal documentary.
You know, yeah, I am very aware of it. I was describing you with the other one because I am very aware of that movie. It's one of those where I think it depends on where you are, because I think the library and the attitude towards the library has to do with the community. So here in Madison, we have a lot of people who really like books, who probably sympathize with a lot of topics that we have on the shelf. Not to say that we don't have a really robust, like different viewpoints. People can check out from left, right, liberal, conservative. We don't have that, but there's not a culture locally that's putting out these challenges, which is, I think, what the librarians address, where sometimes it might not even be residents. Sometimes it might be people who don't own kids who are saying, like, I don't want kids to read this, but so what dog do you have on that one? And it is the librarians just having to, sometimes with an argument that's not really well put, be sort of like the better person in the room, take it calmly, address all the concerns, and just really keep those things open. Sometimes pressure coming in from interest groups or people who are powerful want to just have it their way, and more importantly, want other people to not be able to access those materials, which I think for us is the big concern.
Yeah. Well, speaking of titles and books, we wanted to talk about some book picks that you brought forth. Let's see, I believe we wanted to talk nonfiction. There is a book called Empire of AI, Dreams and Nightmares in Sam Altman's OpenAI. That's by Karen Howe. Am I saying that correctly?
Howe, I guess. Yeah, I think it's Howe. I saw an interview and brilliant person she's a journalist who's been really kind of an insider in the AI and all the IT and all the like really high-powered tech sector. And so she started like, oh, I'm going to document this plucky little nonprofit called OpenAI, and they're doing good, they're going with the world. And it's kind of like all of a sudden all these interests get really enmeshed in that, and OpenAI just becomes a juggernaut. Mm-hmm. But apart from being a juggernaut and maybe shaping how we think, how we produce content online, what we get exposed to when we're watching things on the internet that might be generated by AI, it also presents like some of the things that connect with what's happening in communities here in Madison or in Wisconsin, not Madison, but Mount Pleasant, Mount Horeb, which is right close to us, and Dane County, Beaver Dam, also close by, and Port Washington have had a very strong response from local people when these data centers that feed these AI things that require mass amounts of electricity, mass amounts of waters, and it's kind of like sort of kept out of the picture. I think by the nature of things that are unpopular, these things sort of like are sprung at the last minute. And I think this book really gives you a deep perspective on what are the costs, or what are the things that, did you know that the data, it's not just the computer that reads the data, but humans actually have to review things and quote unquote train and classify the data so that the artificial intelligence can then churn it and do this. And I think one of the things that just really struck me was that there's two, the Port Washington and the Mount Pleasant facilities that are being proposed are going to require more energy than most Wisconsin homes or all Wisconsin homes. So it's, I think it's just one of those things that's really showing us what's going to be the future of things to come, like probably short term, long term, medium term. And this book is brilliant because it really goes from the halls of these tech corporations and down to the people who are getting the data centers in their communities and all along the chains. It's just a fascinating book.
It sounds fascinating. We've got a couple minutes, Martine. I would love to still talk about you. I want to ask you about the book Yesteryear, a fiction book. What can you tell us about this? And is it flying off the shelves at the Madison Public Library?
It's about to, because it's in order, but it's one of those things that I've been really keenly interested in as someone who really keeps track of online cultures and subcultures. And this deals with the trad wife phenomenon, which is this influencer style that has like cottage core, where it's like everything is like either like going back to the 50s, where the wife is there preparing everything and churning the butter and doing all these things, and maybe even going back to like homesteading and doing all these things. But at the same time, it's more an image that's a media product, with the influencers being able to show what they want to show about what they're doing. And behind, like, they'll go with this very quaint kitchen, and behind it, there's like a whole production studio. So it's kind of like an illusion in a way that is presented. But then it also really ties into notions of what it means to be feminine, what it means to be masculine, what are the family roles, what is the role of women. So that's become like a very fraught topic on the internet. And this is a book that really looks at it from a fictionalized, but sort of like the great thing about fiction, it allows these ideas to play out. It allows the writer to have a dialogue and figure out like, okay, so where are the fault points? And then eventually the protagonist gets maybe not what she wished for, gets sent back to 1850s, or maybe it's a reality show, or maybe it's something that she is trying to just do the cognitive dissonance of like, oh, well, this past that was imagined, like, was pretty brutal. So I think it's because it has that caper type of component, then it has that part that really goes in these culture wars that are happening on the internet.
That sounds fascinating, because, you know, I've been fascinated by the trad wife thing from the point of view of what this book is trying to explore. Like, people are saying, oh, I would, you know, I just want to be at home and cook dinner and be take care of the kids. I'm like, yeah, but you're in front of like a $40,000 setup here and you're making lots of money. It's not exactly traditional. It's a look behind. I want to get this book. I want to read this very badly, because reading the synopsis, looks like it could also be a limited series show as well. But I'm looking forward to this.
I don't care what you guys say. I'd love to be a trad wife. Martine, this has been so much fun. Thank you. We look forward to doing this with you more often as the show moves forward. Yeah. It's been great to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you so much. It was so much fun, and definitely looking forward to the next time.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. That is Martine Alvarado with the Madison Public Library. Folks, when we come back, a civic media sports authority, Mike Clemens, will be on this radio show. This is Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach and Nightlight on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen. Great choice, Dom. Spinning the tunes, DJing the night away. Love it. We are back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach, and it is great to have you with us. Our question of the night is, who is your favorite late-night talk show host? We've got. I want to read this text from Zomers. He
yeah.
said that we were talking about, I had kind of a rant about the tiny vans. Same thing with the Tradwife thing. There's a big production crew there filming people living this wonderful life in tiny vans. Aaron says, I could never live in a tiny van or a tiny home long term. Too many of my favorite things take up a lot of space, such as musical instruments, Greg. Also, yeah. I think living in hey. A van would make almost anybody quickly become insufferable. Well said, Zomers. 818 Bridget says, David Letterman. I agree with you, Bridget. 818 Bridget also says, great job, guys. Thank you, Bridget.
Thank you. I also want to say really quick, speaking of just like nice messages, it was Tom in New Berlin says, thank you, Pete and Greg. I don't know what we said or did. Maybe you're just thanking us for being here. That makes me feel good. Thank you
blanket,
so much.
A blanket thank you. And what I would like to thank our next guest preemptively because he's one of my favorites. He is our civic media sports authority and love having him on Nightlight. He joins us, I dare I say, from the Combine in Indianapolis. Mr. Mike Clemens. Hey, buddy.
Pete, Greg, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Can hear you, sir.
All right, this is going to be a walking interview. I just walked through a skywalk in downtown Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine. I got an invite here from Bill Michaels, you know, the statewide sports talk host. Hey, you want to get in? We got this reservation. It's one of these steakhouses that all the NFL guys hang out at. And so, when you get the invite, you guys, I got to do a phone or like, bring it along. So I'm joining you guys now on my way to dinner. What's up?
Well, we were hoping you could tell us, Mike. It's great to, Mike, do you have a favorite talk show host, late night talk show host before we get started?
I like them all. I've become a huge Colbert fan, but I like them all for different reasons. Letterman was great. Carson, I didn't get it quite later on, and I've watched a lot of those reruns. I understand why they say he was the king. He made it look so easy. You know mm-hmm. what was great about Carson is that he made his guests look great.
Yes.
And that's not an easy thing to do. That's not an easy
well
thing
said.
Especially when you're interviewing someone like Burt Reynolds, who is famously just difficult to deal with at all. But
yeah.
Or some
clown that's walking the streets of Indianapolis to a steakhouse. You know what I'm saying?
I just like when you would have people on like Rickles or Bob Uecker who could just make Carson laugh hard. Like anyone who could make Carson laugh hard made me happy because it was just fantastic. And that's like in the basis of this question. Like Johnny Carson's a different host than Conan's. That's different host than Letterman, than Leno. So it's like for me, it's very hard to pick. I love Carson. I love watching those old clips. But for me, the growing up was Conan because I was of that age where I was in my teens and my 20s and he was on. It was very irreverent and fun and wacky, but always silly and fun and funny. But it's a hard question to answer, in my opinion.
And Conan gets better as things go. His podcast is brilliant.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Just won a big award. Best comedy podcast. It's great.
And that's the other thing, too, is you know, we were talking about it earlier. David Letterman, as great as he was on Late Night, I feel like his long-form interviews that are on Netflix are even better because he's changed so much since he left Late Night. He's become a better, more rounded person, a happier person. He seems so much more interested in talking to people. And like Conan, they're built for long-form conversations where they dive deeper into the topics with the people. So for me, I would rather listen to Conan's podcast and David Letterman's show on Netflix because I'm getting a bigger, deeper conversation. But then there's Carson who just, as you said, Mike, is snappy and fun and makes everyone look good and has a great time.
See, I'm a huge fan of interviews. I'm missing Charlie Rose late at night at PBS when I get back home from a stadium and that type of thing. And the Letterman, my next guest is series. Sitting there, if you got Netflix, watch it, folks. There's this one interview where he brings this woman on, and she talks about how she built her merchandise empire that includes cosmetics and, you know, nylons and hair extensions and everything like this and perfumes and everything. And it's brilliant. And you know who he's talking to? Kim Kardashian.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tried to tell that to my wife, like, you have to see this. And it's like, 'cause you think of Kim and, you know, keeping up with the Kardashians, like, and rolling your eyes, like, oh, come on. No, the woman is brilliant. I mean, she did test to be, she passed the bar as an attorney. But her ability early on to build that social media platform, then reach out to her millions of followers, and then to, you know, to get them to buy in as customers and merchandise. I got news for you. Sports teams like the NFL, they're following her model.
There you go.
And she can, she makes a pretty good, she can pull guard. I tried to go for an NFL joke there and I couldn't think of a.
Thank you. No, yeah.
Yeah. Or the what is it? The Hail Mary? I don't know.
I don't know what you're trying to do there, Pete.
Mike, we've got about a minute before we have to break for news. And then we want to talk Combine. And you've supplied us with some outstanding clips. But what is the feeling like in about a minute, if you could, in Indianapolis right now? Are people still getting there? Is there a buzz in the air? What are we looking at?
Yeah, hey, I just talked to some guys that said, you know, their crew, they've got their buddies are 2 days late getting here. Why? Because they're from Boston to New York.
Oh, wow.
They're stuck at airports. They cannot get out. So they're, you know, they're supposed to be here 3 days ago to set up to do a week's worth of shows from here. But no, this is the is the biggest job fair in all of sports. And it's, you know, it was started by a guy who went to UW-Madison, Gil Brandt, back in the 40s.
Oh, that's awesome. And
he had a roommate named Elroy Hirsch, you know, a great Badgers receiver that played for the LA Rams. And Gil got, and he got Gil into the NFL. Gil helped build the Dallas Cowboys with Tom Landry, and he came up with this idea, rather than having all these regional, you know, health fairs for these college players, let's just all do it in a central location like Indianapolis. It's been going like
that
for 4 years.
That's great. All right, we are going to break for the news. Mike Clemens is here, folks, Civic Media Sports Authority. We are coming right back with more Nightlight on the Civic Media Network. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach. And Dom is spinning the tunes. And on the phone, we are having a ball here with our guest, Civic Media Sports Authority, Mike Clemens, always a favorite here at Nightlight. Mike, so what can you tell us? What happens? I know everybody's still getting there. How does the combine play out for you as a reporter over the next day or two?
Well, first, they bring in the general managers and the head coaches for 2 days of press conferences and interviews. And then once they, you know, catch up with what's going on media-wise, what's going on with the teams, then, you know, the stars are the players. And today it was the defensive linemen, and it'll be quarterbacks and wide receivers and defensive backs and, you know, a different position group like that every day. And it's kind of like a car wash. You come in as a 22-year-old player coming out of college, and you do your physical, you do some testings, you go through interviews. You might have, if you're a good player, you might have to, as many as a dozen or more interviews with different teams every day. And then you do the workout that you see on the NFL Network at night, which they're just doing some of the first ones right now over at Lucas Oil Stadium. I'm just outside the convention center. And, you know, you got to run the shuttles, the times. You know, if you're a quarterback and receiver, you throw and pass catches. But, you know, this is part of your audition to get into the NFL. And it's the measurables that all the scouts want to do. They're taking down the times and marking this, and they'll put that into analytics. So the other thing is, you know, the Green Bay Packers. A year ago at this time, I got, you know, this used to be just for, like, the top newspaper writers. I guess I've been doing this long enough or built up a relationship, you know, for our civic media stations where they let me in a couple of years ago. And so it's kind of off the record, but we sit around the table for about an hour with some coffee and croissants with Brian Gutekunst, the GM, and he gives you some backstories for stuff and things that maybe they don't want out there that the other teams to find out, but a lot of it makes sense. And then there's other times where he's just going to, you know, hold his cards close to his chest. But one of the things that we talked to him about in a little press conference, this part was on the record, was, you know, he's getting into free agency. Would you bring back Romeo Doubs, who's going to be, you know, at the end of his rookie contract? You know, he had that little weird situation the 2 years ago where they were going to go to Los Angeles and play the Rams. He's from L.A., and I don't know if he got upset about the game plan or whatever. He was AWOL, and the teammates were concerned. I mean, they went over to his house to check on him, and he's sitting in there playing video games, mad about something.
Oh, man.
And so instead of playing in front of his family and friends in L.A., they benched him. I mean, they suspended him for that game, and he sat, you know, back in Green Bay thinking about it and then had to make amends for that. Well, he's been a dependable possession receiver, but remember last year, what did they do with the first-round pick? They took Matthew Golden, right, who didn't have maybe the best rookie season. It wasn't like a Justin Jefferson out of Vikings 3 or 4 years ago. He had some injuries as well. So we asked Goody, how did you think Romeo Doubs will be back in free agency with a re-signing? And how did you think that Matthew Golden did in his rookie season?
Yeah, I thought Matthew did a great job. But with all the opportunities that we gave him, I thought he did an excellent job. Would have loved to seen him get more opportunities through the year. It didn't work out that way. But when he did, he performed, and he performed at a high level. And really excited to see where he goes in year two. Obviously, he was a third-year player coming out of college, 1 year at Texas, 2 years at Houston. So I think you know, his ceiling is very, very high. We're very, very excited about what he's going to do for our football team moving forward.
Speaking about the wide receiver room, losing a guy like Romeo Doubs into free agency, how do you expect to attack that through the draft and forward?
Yeah, we haven't lost anybody yet, right? We're still kind of going through that process. But you know, Romeo's done a fantastic job for us over his 4 years with the Green Bay Packers. Very consistent. His work ethic is second to none. Again, we'd love to have him back. And if we do, he'll be a bit important part of our football team. And if we don't, I'm sure he'll be very successful wherever he goes.
I heard a couple of words in past tense there. Did you?
Yeah. Like, jumping the gun.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So I speak fluent Goody. You know what I'm saying?
You are our Goody whisperer.
Yeah. Exactly, Greg.
That's awesome.
I know it's very early to, you know, they're at the combine right now. They're doing the thing. They're talking to possible new players. And with regard to the Packers, and this is just trying to get your opinion, Mike, really, because we're just out of the NFL season. Super Bowl was a couple of weeks ago. The Packers season last year was inconsistent, I would say, at best. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't great. But what do you see going into, like, what do you see the moves being made to ramp it up a little bit coming up for this new season as far as tightening up some plays, getting players on board? You know, I know there's injuries that need to be overcome, but what do you see them doing for the 2026 season?
So a year ago at this time, Greg, we're here in downtown Indianapolis in the team hotel in a conference room, and we're saying to Goody, hey, you got close. I mean, you lost 22-10 to the Eagles, who went out and just blew up the Chiefs. They, you know, they beat them 34-0 at halftime and went on to win the Super Bowl. So maybe you're just one game away, right? He goes, yeah, but we lost our last three, so we're going to have to work on that. So coming into the summer, people are saying, ooh, Packers, this could be it. This could be the next step. This could be one of the top two or three teams that you could consider that's going to make it to the Super Bowl. And then they pull out that incredible trade for Micah Parsons with the Dallas Cowboys. And then they win those first two games against the Lions and the Commanders and they're like, holy, you know, wow, look how great this team is. And then they lose to the Cleveland Browns. And then they have some injuries. And then they lose that game to Denver, where Micah Parsons goes down for the rest of the season with a torn ACL. Christian Watson has to go to the hospital to have his rib cage checked out. I was in that locker room, and I talked to Gutekunst about this, and I said, you know, Brian, that team was distraught. I think, look, we just lost to Sean Payton, veteran coach, Bo Nix, young quarterback, and a Broncos team that, even though you guys were beating them by 9 points, they came back and just they outcoached you, out-techniqued you, outplayed you, and won that game. And, you know, and he said, yeah, he realized that. And then they lost the next five, including to the Bears, right? So he knows that he's got to figure that out. Like, if a player or two like that go down, who's going to step up? Can Jordan Love take it to the next level? Can Xavier McKinney, you know, the all-pro safety, can he come up with an interception or something to change the momentum in these games? Because they couldn't at the end of the season.
Yeah. Mike Clemens is our guest. He is the Civic Media Sports Authority. Love having him on Nightlight. We're talking NFL Combine right now. Mike, speak a little bit, if you will, to the loss of Jeff Hafley. That's a big loss. The Packers were a top five defense the last couple of years. They've got great players. How will that loss be absolved by the Packers? And I know they've got a new guy in place, but that's got to hurt a little bit.
Pete, it started with the loss of John Eric Sullivan. John Eric has been Brian Gutekunst's right-hand man for years. You know, he's been with the organization almost 20 years. He tried for some GM jobs last year, came up second for the one in the Jacksonville Jaguars. So today he was talking about, he gets hired as the Miami Dolphins coach. And then we're talking to Jeff Hafley, defensive coordinator, who, you know, we had a pretty good relationship with in his 2 years in Green Bay. And he says, yeah, you know, John, Eric, and I have been talking about this moment for the last 2 years. Like, huh? What? You know, and yeah, I mean, John Eric said for 2 years, he's been saying, Hafley, I like you. And they made it clear. I was talking to one of the guys in the hallway. He said, it's not like they were friends. It's not like they were going over each other's house. But during those 2 years in Green Bay, they thought, John Eric said, if I get a GM job, what would the structure look like? What would make you comfortable? How do you think that we could take stuff from Green Bay? We could adjust, you know, to our own. And they talked about that. And Hafley had a half dozen interviews because of his popularity as the Packers defensive coordinator the last 2 years, which, by the way, he gave up 25 points in the fourth quarter in the last game of the year against the Chicago Bears.
Right. Yeah, right.
And, yeah. Yep.
And still had a half dozen interviews, but he gravitated toward the Dolphins because the owners made some assurances, and the guy that was his, you know, immediate partner, his general manager, he just worked with for the last 2 years in Green Bay. So that's how that gets started. And then Hafley takes a half dozen of his coaches. So there's a new defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, from the Cardinals. He got fired as head coach, but Cardinals are a dysfunctional franchise. He was part of a Eagles defense that got them to the Super Bowl. And so so they're hiring new coaches. They still haven't hired a new special teams coach. But I got to play you guys the clip of the week. I'm already calling this the quote of the week from the combine, which is usually filled with rumors and everything. So you lose to the Bears, right? Do you remember when I told you guys Ben Johnson was the real deal. And a year ago when people were getting all over Caleb Williams, I said, no, this kid's got it. He needs an offensive line. He's got some Favre-like skills. So Ben Johnson gets hired, and at his opening press conference, he says, yeah, and I enjoyed beating the Packers twice a year when I was with the Lions, right? Everybody said, ooh. And then when the Bears and the Packers played this past season, remember those drive-by handshakes at the end of the game between him and Matt LaFleur? So Ben Johnson, your Chicago Bears coach, was on with NBC Sports here at the Combine, and here's how that went down.
What is the deal with the Packers?
Who likes the Packers?
How much of that is leaning fully into your job as Bears coach, and how much of it is how you truly feel?
Yeah, I mean, the Bears and the Packers, they should not like each other. I think it's as simple as that. I think that's going to make this rivalry, this game, something that people are going to watch here going forward.
Have you talked to Matt LaFleur at all?
No, no, we don't talk.
Okay. Do you want it that way?
I'm good with it.
Has he tried to reach out to you?
No.
Would they date?
Oh, my God. I got to tell you, as a Bear fan, that made me so nervous. When he said that at that press conference, and I live half my life in Wisconsin and love Wisconsin, but I'm a Bear fan, I'm like, oh, I don't need this tension, Mike.
No. And
it sounds like the old school wrestlers.
Yeah.
That's exactly it, Greg. It's pro wrestling promotion. You know, they're having some fun. And you know what, though? LaFleur doesn't want to play this game. LaFleur has figured out the way that you survive in the NFL, like a Sean McDermott who finally got his walking papers, is I don't want to be the story. The players are the story. I don't want to say something that gets into people's craw, and they play it on a loop over and over again. And the next thing you know, fan dissension builds, and it can turn quickly in this business. And you're going to be out of a job. So that's the way LaFleur is going to play it, and I don't think he's going to take the bait on it.
My dad would call that being classy in the press. He loved it when athletes said less.
Yeah, right. But apparently that's not the way that this Ben Johnson wants to play down there in Chicago. And I'm sure that's the McCaskey family, the owners, and most importantly, the Chicago Bears fans, who, I'll tell you what, 4 or 5 years ago, I'd be covering a Bears-Packers game down in Soldier Field. There might be 3 or 4 of those guys with those cheese grater hats, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the opposite of the, yeah. There must have been 1,000 of that last Packers-Bears game.
Yeah.
I was in Chicago then. It was insane. And I just, to me, I just, I look, he's delivering, but he can't, I'm not saying he got lucky either. He's a great coach, but as a fan, it just makes me really nervous, because the more your coach is running his trap, mm-hmm. the farther you have to fall. And I live in Packer country, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and hey, listen, I kind of love it. I mean, you know, Ben Johnson said, hey, I don't care about bulletin board material. Bring it. So we'll see how we're in the Packers respond.
Absolutely. Mike, as always, my friend, thanks so much. Enjoy the heck out of Indianapolis.
I got to cross the street there. It's like playing a game of Frogger. You know what I'm saying?
Be careful, buddy. All right.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you. Thanks. We're coming right back for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe and Greg Bach on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Greg is busy playing the drums, so I will say welcome back to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that was my turn. Oh, sorry.
I think it was. You look good, though, dude. You were really jamming.
I am an air drum enthusiast. I can, but you put sticks in my hands and put me in front of things that resemble a drum, I will be the most embarrassing person in your world. But air drumming, I'm amazing at.
Oh, that was beautiful, man. You were crushing it. You know, you were so good at the air drums, I thought, yeah, he can actually play the drums. Whereas when I do it, it's just nonsense, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for everything tonight, folks. We thank you to Mike Clemens, Martin Alvarado, and Tom Tran. Thank you for all your calls and texts. Speaking of texts, we've got to get through a few. We'll do our best here. We got an avalanche here. Nick from Marshall in the 608 says, hard to pick just one. I choose David Letterman, Conan O'Brien, and Jimmy Kimmel. Hard to argue with any of those, Greg.
I mean, Jimmy Kimmel, when they announced that Kimmel was getting his own late night show, which, by the way, back in the day was live at midnight. That was the old model. And it was post The Man Show, and everyone sort of had this thing of, what? But that was the same attitude people had towards Conan, too. And Kimmel has, I don't think Kimmel's the greatest interviewer. I think he's kind of weird, but I think that's part of his charm. But who he has become over the past 20 years has been nothing short of amazing. I watch his monologue every single morning when I catch up on that stuff on YouTube. I always watch his monologue because it's always so good, and he's so pointed and so opinionated, and it's still always wrapped in the silliest. And sometimes I would say sophomore humor, which I am here for. But I love Kimmel. Love Kimmel.
Dude, I do too, and I will say that he is the closest maybe to Carson just in the sense that he's so calm. Carson was very – Letterman was acerbic, and I love – Letterman's my favorite, but Conan's kind of jumpy. Leno, I couldn't even stand watching him. I loved him as a comedian, had trouble with him as a host, but I think Kimmel is close to Carson. Speaking of Carson, Cindy in the 920 says Johnny Carson. Anna from Madison in the 608 says, hi, Pete and Greg. My favorite late-night talk show host is Johnny Carson. He had great guests and was very funny. When I was in high school, I remember staying up late to watch The Wedding of Tiny Tim and Miss Vicky. She says, I like the new show. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you very much. Peter in New London listening on WISS says, Conan was my favorite. I still crack up thinking about some of the little skits he had done, like the staring contest with Andy and, of course, the bear that had self fun. I'm not saying that word on the air. I still love – and. The year 2000. If you don't know what that is, YouTube Conan the year 2000. It was a bit they did before and actually a little bit after the year 2000 where they would do predictions. But that's all I'm going to tell you because it's some of the most – that's the thing I love about Conan too, that show, is there are so many examples of great like recurring sketches that would happen. And the year 2000 is one I reference regularly.
That's a great one. And if I had to do that for Letterman, I would say the Rupert sketches where he's telling Rupert what to do.
Yeah.
Pretend well, you're a waiter and stick your thumb in someone's water. And like, just, he's cracking up half the time too. It was so funny.
And that's the thing about Letterman that was, I don't want to say disappointing, but his show, at least the Late Show, his NBC and the early iteration of the Late Show on CBS, but more the NBC Late Show or Late Night, had much more silly sketches, skits, wacky and like almost avant-garde type of things happening. And then when he moved to CBS, it became more of the cookie cutter. But when you watch those old NBC bits he does, which is what I love about him, and Carson did the same thing, and Conan does it too. An amazing library on YouTube to go back on and look at all of these amazing interviews. I mean, the David Letterman interview he did with Harvey Pekar, the artist, on the NBC, where they get into a literal shouting match at each other. It's so good. Yeah, I love it. I love late night television.
Let's try to get through some more of these social media responses, because this question crushed today in social media. Boris Hamilton says, Carson, Letterman, Cavett. Great, Boris. Thank you. Sam Wargula. From Radio for Pets. Greg, we got to have them on sometime. Great punk band. Sam says, Letterman, Carson, Ferguson, Conan. I love how people are ranking them. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Ferguson, Craig. Oh, God. Let's talk about Craig Ferguson one of these days. Let's try to get him on the show, could we? I'd love that.
What's he doing now? Absolutely.
He does stand-up. He does stand-up. I mean, he does. He has. Oh, he has a podcast. Everyone has a podcast. But this podcast.
Yeah, this is the perfect forum for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ellen Martin says, I honestly would include Charlie Rose in a top list, despite things that got him canceled culturally. Dick Lesperon says, Carson, no one even close except Letterman. Scott Lieberman says, Dick Lesperon, I agree. Brenda Bell, I second this. He had two vouchers, Greg, on the social media. Did Dick.
Whoa.
Yeah. Our pal Mike Desitel says, Carson and Letterman, each was true to themselves. The guests and the audience always came first. I never sensed an agenda, and their comedy was sharp and quick. Both men were big enough not to only make the audience laugh with them, but also at them. Great text. Daniel Wheeler says, Conan O'Brien. Love it, Daniel. J.B. Thompson, guy behind the guy behind the guy, says, tough question to answer. Who wrote most of their own material, and who had a battery of writers? I think they all had a battery of writers.
No, they all had writers. I think Craig Ferguson's the only one who had a small room because he would improv a lot of his stuff on stage.
Yeah.
And he's a guy who really, like, at one point stopped caring about being a late night host and just wanted to have a good show. And he had Bishop Desmond Tutu on his show one time.
Right. Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah. I wish there was more of a library of his old shows. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Notice that no one's saying James Corden, though.
No one is saying James Corden. Rich Tallarico from Key and Peele, love it. Says,
Rich.
Carson, Conan, Letterman, Leno. All right.
Carson, Conan.
That's not a bad lineup. Our buddy Tony Zimmerman says, I consider anything after five late night, so I'm going with Pete. Oh, well, thank you.
Excuse me?
That's left over from a couple weeks ago, and I did compliment his baby on the meeting earlier, so he probably just gave me the nod there. Patrick Mine says, Space Ghost, Sean Boyce, Letterman, or Chevy? Oh. That has to be a joke, right?
Come on! What a way to end the show today. Yeah, oh, my goodness. All right, folks, we got to get out of here, so I'm going to thank Tucker. I'm thanking on behalf of Pete. So we're going to thank Tucker. We're going to thank Dominic. We're going to thank engineering, traffic. All you guys make the things work. Everyone who texted, called, came on the show. Without you, there's no us. Stick around for more Civic Media. Catch us tomorrow. We have a great show. We're going to be talking to Wisconsin Public Radio as well as a popcorn picks. All right, we got to get out of here. Talk to you later. Civic Media, take care. Good night.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.